Today's program is brought to you by Happy Chef Uniforms, the perfect style, whatever your recipe. Visit happychef.com to order your free 2018 catalog.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show tracing the stories behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic. So, welcome to the last episode of the season for Feast Meets West. And today, that coincides with a conversation about one of my favorite foods of all time, the xiaolongbao. Even if the term xiaolongbao isn't recognized, a lot of New Yorkers know and love soup dumplings. We're talking about the bite-sized, hand-pleated buns, traditionally filled with minced pork. Another popular variation is with like minced crab meat and roe mixed in. They're steamed and served in stackable bamboo baskets. The soup actually comes from this meat gelatin that's mixed into the filling. And they are usually dipped in black zhenjiang vinegar with raw ginger slivers. So they're some of the best bites of food you can put in your mouth and fun to eat, as long as you don't burn your tongue. So a little bit about soup dumplings. They are originally from Shanghai, China, and have been popularized internationally by the Taiwanese cooking oil store turned restaurant chain Din Tai Fung. The origin story is somewhat debatable, but the one that's frequently repeated is that the soup dumpling came from the Shanghai suburb of Nanxiang in 1875. A man named Huang Mingxian decided he could attract customers to his restaurant by creating a surprising new variety of dumplings with soup. Also, visually pleasing, the thin dough wrapper had to be pleated exactly 14 times, creating a small circular cinching at the top, and he figured that the petite size of the dish would make it memorable and create a following. It worked! So in the studio with us, we have Sean Tang, managing partner for Pinch Chinese, which recently got named the best soup dumpling in New York Magazine's roundup of best new things to eat in the city. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the xiaolongbao at Pinch Chinese. How do you guys make them?
Everything for our xiaolongbao is made in-house. So we start every day with raw ingredients, flour, water, baking soda, Berkshire Heritage pork we get from Nyman Ranch that we grind ourselves. And we make our own soup gelatin that you were talking about out of pork bones and pork meat. So it's actually not a one-day process. You know, the soup has to be made in advance. It needs to be refrigerated so that it forms that gelatin that you can use to fold into the dumpling. And every morning, our culinary team of chefs starts the day by developing the wrapper, the dough that they use to wrap the soup dumpling in. And what you just said about the way that soup dumplings are made, there are variations on that, but it was pretty accurate that, it's in our restaurant, it's 18 to 20 folds.
Pleats. Nice.
And it's very much is a bite-sized, just delicious morsel of food.
So yeah, you mentioned there's different variations on that. So what kinds of xiaolongbao do you have on the menu?
We do three xiaolongbao right now. There's the traditional pork style with pork soup. We also do a seafood and pork soup dumpling. So that has scallop, crab, minced shrimp in it.
Sounds premium.
It's a sweeter version. You know, seafood can be very sweet, so it is a sweeter soup dumpling. And then we also do a chicken soup dumpling. We are in New York City. You know, there are quite a few people who don't eat pork here. And so we have a chicken soup dumpling where the everything in there is pork-free.
Oh, there you go. You've adapted to New York tastes, too. So as a xiaolongbao expert, what do you look for in a good soup dumpling? What are the qualities that make up a good soup dumpling?
The thing with what makes a good soup dumpling, I think that when you talk about food in general, everything about good is subjective. And for me personally, that can't be more true than with something like the soup dumpling, which is something that's so simple. I personally look for something that's bite size, so a little bit on the smaller side. I like to be able to eat my soup dumpling in one bite. And then the first thing you always notice is the wrapper. You can feel it when you pick it up with your chopsticks or your hands. You can tell, you know, whether it's thick or thin.
Thin is good, right?
I prefer thin. I have friends and I know people who prefer thicker wrappers. I prefer thin.
I feel like the expertise comes with like being able to get it so thin.
I think that's true. I think, you know, there's the qualities you see in a thinner wrapper soup dumpling where the wrapper has a little bit of that stretch that give the ability to hold the soup and the filling without breaking. That is obviously a little more difficult with a thinner wrapper. So I personally prefer thinner wrappers. I also think the ratio of wrapper to filling is better when it's a little bit thinner, where you get, you know, that nice chewiness from the wrapper, but it doesn't overwhelm the inside, the filling. So a thinner wrapper to me is a better soup dumpling. But like I said, it's totally subjective.
Sure. And then teach us how to eat soup dumplings, or what is your preferred way to eat it? Because again, this can be a subjective question.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
The way I've been taught, the way I've learned, the way I've seen it, there are two predominant methods to eat a soup dumpling without burning your face off. The first one is, and this is my preferred method, you take a soup dumpling and you put it in the soup spoon. And the size of the soup spoon is very important. The smaller soup dumplings tend to fit well in the soup spoon. So you're able to then pinch the side of the soup dumpling with your chopsticks and create a little hole. Just literally like if you're pushing a pencil into a piece of paper, you can create a little hole with the end of your chopsticks, let the soup run out into the spoon. And then just drink the soup as if, you know, any other soup. Once you've had that, then you can enjoy the rest of the soup dumpling without any damage to your tongue. So that's the first way of eating soup dumplings. The second way, which is the preferred method for my general manager, Miguel De Leon, he likes to bite the top off. So that pleat, the cinch at the top, that hole, he bites the entire piece off, which allows him to blow into the soup dumpling.
Oh, you know, blow like cool. A little cup?
Exactly, yeah. Like a little cup. And he's able to blow the soup cool and then suck the soup out of the soup dumpling and then eat the soup dumpling again as if you're eating any other dumpling. The third method, a little bit more adventurous because you have to time it right. You have to you'll learn if you eat enough soup dumplings about how long it takes for that soup dumpling to cool off enough where the inside is no longer scalding.
Oh, wow.
And it's just that warm soup temperature where you can just bite the whole thing. Just put it in your mouth like
and
one
let
bite.
It just burst.
It just bursts in your mouth.
Okay, I've never done this.
Oh, it takes some.
I'm never patient enough because it shows up on the table and I'm like, oh, this is so delicious. And I have to eat it immediately.
For sure. And everyone who's tried this has gone through the same painful experience of burning their tongue. But you learn over time. It's usually by that third soup dumpling that you're okay. You're in the clear. Give it 2-3 minutes. The wrapper is still nice and thin and moist, but the inside is no longer scaldingly hot.
Interesting. Okay, so the time at pinch Chinese is potentially 2-3 minutes after the dumplings arrive on the table. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, risk takers. So also tell us about your, you know, expert chefs that you have at the restaurant. And I heard that, you know, there's a relationship that you guys have with the internationally renowned XLB Mecca Din Tai Fung too. Is that coming from like one of your chefs there?
Absolutely. So it's interesting. We actually have multiple chefs from Din Tai Fung or who've worked at Din Tai Fung before. So our executive chef, Chef Charlie Chen, was most recently an executive chef for Din Tai Fung in Shanghai. He has a career with Din Tai Fung that spans, you know, 16 years almost. He was with them when they first expanded into Shanghai. So their very first store in Shanghai, in Hongqiao, which is in western Shanghai near Hongqiao Airport, which is the domestic regional airport for Shanghai. That first store, he was hired to be their executive sous chef. The executive chef at the time, Chef Cao Guanglong, he is the person that we had a relationship with before we started the restaurant. And he introduced us to Charlie as someone who may be interested in helping us with our concept and our vision for this, for what ended up being Pinch Chinese. And through Chef Charlie, he brought with him a tree of chefs that he trained over those 15, 16 years at Din Tai Fung Shanghai, who'd gone to restaurants across China. So our executive sous chef, Charles Zhang, his Chinese name is Zhang Hua. He came from Din Tai Fung in Chengdu, which is the capital of Sichuan province. He was the executive chef there overseeing two of their restaurants, the two in Chengdu. And he joined the team as our executive sous chef. And then our executive sous chef on the dim sum side, so those overseeing the soup dumplings and the other dumplings. While I wasn't an employee at Din Tai Fung in the past, I actually worked for Chef Cao, who was the executive chef for Din Tai Fung all those years ago when they first started in Shanghai. And he was actually trained by Chef Charlie.
Amazing. So with that, do you feel like what you guys serve at Pinch Chinese is similar to what you find at Din Tai Fung, or has like Chef kind of made it his own with his like experience and background?
I think that they definitely, you know, with all the time they've spent at Din Tai Fung or with all the learnings they've taken from their time there, there are definitely been influences from Din Tai Fung, which does, you know, there are pieces of that on our menu. You'll see that. But I think they've also taken to the challenge of opening this restaurant in New York City, and opening it in a market that's so demanding and so exacting. You know, the New York City consumer for restaurants, I still believe, is the smartest, most sophisticated consumer in any city I've ever been to. And I've been, you know, to a fair number, mm-hmm. both, you know, here in the U.S. and abroad. And what they expect from a restaurant and what they expect when they patronize a restaurant, is that standard is very, very high. So to say that if they could just come here and open a Din Tai Fung, I think that would be doing our taste buds and the consumers in New York a disservice to say that we would just accept a copycat, because I don't think New Yorkers, they like to make things their own.
Of course.
We like to make things our own. So if you want to make it in New York as a restaurant or really any food service, and as anyone in the food service industry, then you need to see what makes New Yorkers tick and what we want. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the big draw for Chef Charlie and his team when we approached them about this project was, I've been in New York for, 12 years now. I'm not a New Yorker, but, originally I'm from outside Buffalo, New York, but, this is where I call home, and I've been dining out 99% of the time since I've been in New York.
It's the most logical thing to do, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he's had offers in the past to do projects, with other people, and for the first time, he was able to talk to someone who wanted him to come to New York and who was, for all intents and purposes, a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really thoughtful path. And also, is it interesting to, come after, say, like a Joe's Shanghai? Because I think like for many years, that's the soup dumpling that New Yorkers knew they could get. But like, I think what you guys offer, visually, it does look different, tastes different. What are your like thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah, Joe's is an institution in New York City. I mean, when I first came to New York, Joe's is the only Chinese restaurant I'd ever heard of or knew about, or anybody I knew about, with any, you know, certain degree. So Joe's has been around forever, and I don't think they're going away anytime soon. And, you know, what we offer at Pinch Chinese is not what Joe Shanghai offers at their restaurants. It's a different style of soup dumpling. Theirs is larger, has a thicker wrapper, has more soup. And I think definitely from a taste profile, like you said, it's tastes different as well. So I think the similarities end at the name soup dumpling. And so, you know, like anything else when we were talking about earlier, was food is so subjective. There are people who love us for what we do. There are people who love Joe Shanghai for what they do. And I think it's great that we're both here.
Yeah, there's a spectrum of soup dumplings, and that's why there's now like categories of like best soup dumpling that exists. And so I think, like, also curious to hear, why do you think people in New York love soup dumplings and want to like just invest in that category?
That's hard for me to say, I'll be honest. I think, you know, when we look at dumplings in general, there's such a comfort level there with dumplings because they're so culturally agnostic. Almost every culture has their own dumpling, whether Tibetan momos, Italian ravioli or agnolotti, Japanese gyoza, Korean mandu. Every culture, you know, Polish pierogies, every culture, every ethnicity, I feel like, has some kin food that's like a dumpling or is a form of a dumpling. So, you know, these greatest dumplings lists or what have you that come out, you know, we all can identify with those, even if it's, even if that dumpling isn't necessarily our comfort cultural, you know, icon. I love
pierogies. The cultural aspect of the comfort is recognized.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's across all ethnicities. And in New York, that's so important because we're such a fabric of different cultures here, which is what, which is one of the greatest things about the city, and that there's such an appreciation by anyone across cultures. So like I was saying, I love pierogies. I love Korean mandu. I love gyoza, and on and on and on. And I think the recognition of the soup dumpling is maybe just that twist that, you know, is that we've, you know, the Chinese people have put on the typical dumpling by putting soup inside the dumpling. So I think that's maybe still a little bit on the exciting side. You know, it's not what we're all used to from growing up. It's my family never made soup dumplings. I've never had a soup dumpling homemade ever.
Yeah, yeah. It's not something I've tried.
I do imagine I would try. I've seen, you know, the how-tos and the recipes, and I see my guys make my culinary team make them every day.
Yeah.
And when I see them working, I'm like, I would never try that at home.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go out and eat at Pinch Chinese instead.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're going to take a really quick break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West.
Maybe you're looking for a coat for yourself or you want a bold look for your staff. You might even need a new style for your restaurant, whether it's modern, industrial, or farm to table. Whatever you're looking for, Happy Chef has got you covered. Their wide variety of chef apparel and products are perfect for teams of all sizes and styles. And with the industry's easiest custom embroidery, you can add your logo, name, or fun artwork to many of their other products in minutes. Here's what you do. Visit happychef.com and choose from their incredible selection. With only a couple clicks, you can customize many of their products to personalize your look. Right now, they're even offering free custom logo setup on all orders over $150, a $95 value totally free. Visit happychef.com now to order your free 2018 catalog featuring new styles and incredible comfort. Happy Chef, the perfect style, whatever your recipe.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. So Sean, you guys have way more than just dumplings at Pinch Chinese. Can you tell us about the other heavy hitters on your menu?
Yeah, so we opened as a really dumpling-centric restaurant. Everyone knew about the connection to Din Tai Fung, and so, you know, the natural curiosity was to come and have our dumplings, and that was kind of what we were. But that was never the intent of the restaurant. We really wanted to expand beyond the dim sum and dumplings that I think most people wanted to expect from us. So, you know, when we were reviewed by Pete Wells in the Times, he highlighted the Winsan chicken, which was one of the very first, you know, kind of big endeavors we took as a culinary team, was to figure out how to execute Winsan chicken in a way that, you know, paid the proper amount of respect to the dish that came out of Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's a Hong Kong dish.
It is. Winsan chicken is a very famous dish in Hong Kong. I had it for the first time with who's now my father-in-law in Hong Kong. He took me to...
it was that good.
It was that good.
That the families became married over...
Yes, day. Yes. He took me to a restaurant hall above a wet market, which is very common in Hong Kong and in Asia. Wet markets are readily available everywhere. And this specific restaurant was famous for the Winsan chicken. I'd never had it before. So he ordered that and a bunch of other things, and this roasted bird comes out, you know, cut up like most Chinese poultry is cut up, you know, and deboned, and it just plopped on a table, on a plastic table, plastic plates, you know, plastic cups, and it. When I bit into the first piece of chicken, I was like, "Oh my God, this is as good a roast chicken as I've ever had anywhere." Period. Full stop. And right after that, literally right after that meal, I got in touch with my partners and said, this is a dish we should start looking at right now. Because, you know, I don't consider myself a Chinese food expert, but I've had a lot of Chinese food in my life. I grew up eating it. I grew up going to Chinatowns in Toronto. My parents cooked every night. So I grew up eating Chinese food. I never had a dish like this before. Mm-hmm. Never even seen this dish on menus anywhere. And so I was like, well, this is a dish that we could introduce that would be significantly different than any other Chinese chicken dish, that roast chicken dish that anyone in New York's ever had, because I'd never even heard of the dish before I went to Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Hong Kong restaurants aren't that well represented in New York City. It's such a niche food. It's not Cantonese, but it is Cantonese. It's not Chinese, but it is Chinese. It's Hong Kong's own spin on Chinese and Cantonese food. And so this dish for me represents one of those great hits that New Yorkers maybe weren't familiar with before this.
That's really cool. And so I guess, you know, how would you describe your concept at Pinch Chinese? Because you have the dumplings, and you have this Winsan chicken from Hong Kong. So what kind of Chinese restaurant?
I think that, you know, when we first started this project, we wanted to create a restaurant that would be widely accessible. We saw a place in the market where you could get, you know, very cheap Chinese food at takeout restaurants and on your corner. And then you have higher-end Chinese restaurants like Philippe, Mr. K's, but really the middle was underserved. So there wasn't a place like a Roberta's for Chinese food, since we're in this beautiful restaurant. And that's what we wanted to try and create with Pinch Chinese. So to that end, we wanted to figure out what Chinese comfort food was, what is accessible to everybody, while staying true to the origin of that food. And so I think that's what you see at Pinch Chinese. All of our food is fairly traditional. It's just done with care and love from a team of chefs who are experts at that food.
Mm-hmm. So it really is kind of like the greatest hits menu.
It really is. I think that you'll see foods from across regions. We have foods from Sichuan province, like Mapo Tofu and Dandan Noodle, that have both had influences from Taiwan. We have the Winsan chicken from Hong Kong. Our dumplings are, you could say, they're Shanghainese or Taiwanese. We have other Cantonese dishes. We have whole steamed fish. And then, you know, Beijing's greatest hit, Peking duck, is something
great
we introduced.
Perfect for sharing.
Perfect for large groups. You know, our it's almost always asked for by groups of like 4 to 6 people. Almost, we had a group that came in the other night. They called and said, "Hey, we want to come in an hour. It's like 6 or 7 of us. Can you fit us in?" We're like, "I think we can squeeze you in." They're like, "We're only coming if we can get the Peking duck." And I was like, "This was like 8:30 at night." I was like,
"Whoa."
Yeah, let me see if we have any ducks left. And we had one duck left, and we had a couple tables ahead of them. And I was like, "I can't promise you anything. If one of these tables wants it, I have to sell it to them. But if you hurry up and come over here, and you guys get here, I'll save it for you." And they like came over like 20 minutes later. They had to wait a little bit for a table, but they came like 20 minutes later and sat there drinking cocktails and wine at the bar until their table was ready, and we had the peeing duck for them. So it all worked out in the end.
Awesome. What a miraculous New York evening.
Mm-hmm. And actually, just a funny little thought, as we sit here speaking right now, my ops consultant, Adam Rand, is actually at Pinch Chinese with Alex Stupak from Empayon and the ownership team from Empayon, celebrating one of their birthdays with our Peking duck.
There you go.
Birthday duck, as we were kidding about earlier.
So you mentioned cocktails, wine. Tell us about your beverage menu at the restaurant.
Yeah, so we have a pretty ambitious beverage program at Pinch Chinese. Miguel De Leon, my general manager, is also my wine director. He's put together a really thoughtful menu of wines that he pairs well with Asian cuisine. Miguel himself is Filipino. And is very familiar with the flavors of Asian cuisines. Obviously grew up with it as a Filipino kid. The intersection of European and Asian influences. And is himself very familiar. He loves Chinese food. He's very familiar with Chinese food. So, when we started the project together, I kind of just stood back and gave him free rein on the wine list. Mm. And he's put together a really thoughtful list of about 200 references across, regions, totally across regions, really focusing on more interesting wines that maybe aren't as well known, because it's a different approach to pairing wines with Asian foods with our flavors.
How do you do that with your menu?
Our menu is all fairly light. So the overarching kind of conceptual premise of the food that we do at Pinch Chinese is it's well thought out, it's carefully developed, and it's going to won't leave you feeling heavy or bloated after your meal. That's a big thing for us, is that you feel clean and energized after your meal. And the wine program has to reflect that. A lot of very mineral driven, a lot of very pretty dry wines in general that express the terroir that they're grown in is very important. You're not going to get a lot of super aromatic, super flowery wines at the restaurant, because that can overpower the food.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike perhaps some Western cuisines, it doesn't pair as well with the flavor profiles, because the flavor profiles of Chinese food tend to be a little bit earthier. A little bit because of the use of soy sauce as a base flavor to develop a lot of the sauces. Okay. So there's always a variation similar to Italians use olive oil and olives as a base flavor. The Chinese use soy sauce as a base flavor, and then they kind of grow off that. Mm. And it's because of the earthiness of the flavors, some of the more aromatic floral wines don't necessarily pair as well. And I think that's the direction Miguel's kind of gone in, which is to go away from that, I should say.
Cool. That's something to keep in mind for sure. And so curious to hear, because it sounds like you've done a good bit of traveling. What were the key moments or influences? Was it while you were traveling in China that kind of led you to open Pinch Chinese?
Yeah. So the idea for opening this restaurant, or the original idea, was to get a restaurant to open here. Not to be involved in the actual owning and operating of a restaurant in New York, but to get a restaurant that already existed, who's doing something fun, exciting that, I loved, people I knew loved, my family loved, to then open in New York and kind of bring their concept to New York. And the idea was that I would help them along the way, guide them as far as, being boots on the ground.
Being the tastemaker,
sure. Funny enough, I call myself the head food taster. I'm not the owner, I'm not the operating partner, I'm the head food taster. But to to help them establish a presence in New York. That was the idea. Mm-hmm. The fact that we opened the restaurant only grew off the idea. And I guess I would say the biggest influence on that was just having gone back to China, at this point, you know, probably half dozen, almost 8 to 10 times. And about 4 years ago, I went back for a month to take some time off, professionally, and, you know, brought back all those memories, you know, growing up, you know, having spent time in China, brought back all those memories of the culture, the food, the people, and how amazing and how amazingly it was developing. You know, Shanghai and China was changing so fast, so quickly that it was, you know, barely recognizable from trip to trip for me.
So what kind of changes did you see in Shanghai?
Oh, I mean, every way you can imagine, you know, neighborhoods were popping up. It felt like overnight. You know, when I had gone there in 2000, I'm trying to think back at this point, I'm so old. 2003 was the first time I went to China proper, then 2007. And then this trip that I went back where kind of formed this concept of opening a restaurant was 2013. So that was a 3-year gap followed by a almost 7-year gap. It was almost unrecognizable. Neighborhoods that had been super vibrant and very popular when I was there in 2003 and then 2007 had kind of, you know, matured and were no longer those hot spots. That there were these totally new neighborhoods that there was nothing there when I was there in 2007. The neighborhoods didn't even exist that were now, you know, bars and clubs and restaurants and office buildings that are just totally vibrant. And so it really is the speed with which the city just pops up and grows.
Mm-hmm. What about the food landscape and the dining experiences there?
Yeah, I think the great thing about a city like Shanghai that's unique even among Chinese cities is how international it is. It's the port of call for business in greater China. And so it's that place where you're going to see the most, you know, foreigners, expats, who are doing business there, living, doing business there. And that's reflected in the food culture you can get there. So you can get, you know, similar to New York, you can get foods from every region of the country, foods from every region of the world. And that's reflected, you know, very carefully in the restaurants that are there, which is you're going to go to a very traditional Shanghainese restaurant or modern Shanghainese restaurant. You go to traditional Szechuan restaurants or modern Szechuan restaurants, Cantonese and so on and so forth. And you're going to see the entire spectrum from cheap eats outside of the road to white tablecloth fine dining. And it's across all of these regional cuisines. And so that is something that I think is very special, that is unique to Shanghai. As far as, you know, I've been to some second tier cities. I've been to Beijing and Hong Kong and Taipei. The breadth of Chinese cuisine in Shanghai is unlike anywhere else in China. Similar to New York with the breadth of food that we have here. So I think in that way, the two cities to me were very similar, even with the cultural gaps and the cultural differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds super dynamic. And so what's the reception been like so far in the New York neighborhood?
Being in Soho is not an easy, it's not an easy neighborhood to be in. It's very vibrant, on the retail side. It's a shopping destination for sure. And with that comes a lot of tourists and unsurprisingly, not that many New Yorkers. I myself was not a person that had ever really spent time in Soho before I opened the restaurant. And so for me, it was a new experience, but what we discovered, in our little pocket of West Soho, we're on Princeton between Thompson and Sullivan, and that's, we're just a block and a half off 6th Avenue and kind of the western boundary of Soho. That little pocket of West Soho is actually a corner of the city that a lot of people might overlook, but it's a really rich restaurant neighborhood. Across the street from us is Raoul's, the French bistro that's been there for 40 plus years. Blue Ribbon, which is now the parent company of the very famous Blue Ribbon Sushi. Their brasserie's around the corner from us, as well as a Blue Ribbon Sushi location. Two doors down from us is the Dutch, Andrew Carmelini's new American restaurant that feels like it's a neighborhood staple, though they've only been there for 6.5-7 years, but they feel like they've been there forever. And so this corner of the city has this really, really rich, really deep restaurant culture that we've been very lucky to be a, become a part of, and really been, we've been welcomed into the community really strongly. You know, we've gotten to know the guys at the Dutch, Chef Jason, General Manager Jamie there very well. Kareem Raul, who owns Raul's across the street, was an early fan of ours, early supporter of ours, and likewise of us, of him. The burger there, by the way, is phenomenal. And other just restaurants from around the area. We're so close to West Village. Chef Matthew Highland over at Emily Pizza.
Yeah.
This huge support of ours.
That's amazing. It just sounds like so diverse, and you guys are at least providing, you know, a Chinese angle to that and complementing what's already there too.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's been a big part of the reception we've gotten from Soho locals is, you know, being in this corner of Soho where it's, you know, a restaurant centric neighborhood, is because there's so much, there's actually quite a bit of residential in that neighborhood right there. And I think, you know, what we're offering at Pinch Chinese is different than what the neighborhoods had in the past. We were told that we're one of the first Chinese restaurants most of the residents can remember in the last 20, 30 years.
Oh, wow. Definitely filling a gap then.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's been super rewarding for us, is, you know, so many of the guests on any given night are neighborhood guests or, you know, regulars who live nearby. Or we even just recently had someone that, you know, made a point to say hello to me and wanted to meet me because they lived in Soho for a very long time. They moved away. They live in Westchester now, but they come back to Soho every now and again. They were there for 20, 30 years. And, you know, they made a point to come into this new restaurant that they heard about and really wanted to say hello to me because they said, you're filling a gap that existed for us when we were here. And it's great to see the neighborhood kind of continue to grow.
Awesome. If the mayors of Soho bless you, that is a good thing.
Absolutely.
And so what's next for you and Pinch Chinese?
Ooh, that's hard to say. I mean, we've been open for 13 months, and it's been a really exciting roller coaster of a year and a month. I think we all want to see Pinch continue to grow. You know, off camera, you and I were talking about this earlier with Simon, that we're expected to be a mature restaurant right off the bat. And that's a hard ask for an independent restaurant. That's, you know, for us, it was our first restaurant. For the chefs, even, it was their first restaurant in America. So for us to become a mature restaurant right off the bat was a big order for us, like a tall task. And it's only now that we're starting to feel like we know who we are as a restaurant. We know what it is that we do well and how we want to bring that to the people of the city and how we want to bring that to our guests every single night. We have, you know, hopes and ambitions to bring this to other parts of the city, to bring this to other cities, you know, around the country. You know, mm-hmm. we're in this great kind of I-95 corridor here with Boston and D.C. that are really sister cities and so close and have such a rich fabric that it'd be great to be part of those cities someday. But right now, I'd like to see Pinch Chinese just be as good as it can be right now.
Awesome. So just like watching it mature and grow.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Amazing. So thank you so much for sharing your insights with us, Sean. That just about wraps up today's show. What's the best way for our listeners to stay up to date on Pinch Chinese news?
So you can visit our website, www.pinchchinese.com, or you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, at Pinch Chinese or facebook.com/PinchChinese. We post there fairly regularly. In particular, we announce new initiatives on our website as well as on social media. And I'll do a little plug right now if that's okay.
Please do.
We are beginning on April 1, which is this Sunday, Easter, releasing a special collaboration with Chef Matthew Highland from Emily Pizza. All proceeds are going to benefit City Harvest of New York, which provides meals for lower-income people, particularly kids. It's an organization that's very near and dear to our hearts and Chef Matthew. He's been working with them for a long time. We're going to do a modern-day poo-poo platter, you know, sampler of an egg roll, pan-fried dumpling, and a modern-day crab rangoon. We adapted three of Emily's pizzas into dim sum.
Oh.
So beginning April 1 for the month of April, you can get that at the restaurant during all meal services. Like I said, every dollar that you spend on those is getting donated directly to City Harvest. So it's not profits. It's 100%. And that platter will be available for $18. So every time you come in and eat that platter, the $18 goes straight to City Harvest.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. What a good like community mission.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're so lucky that, you know, when we approached Matthew about it, he was super gung-ho. He's like, let's absolutely do this. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, twist my arm to eat more crab raccoon. Blah. Thank you, Sean, for sharing that. And for you listeners out there, did you enjoy this episode? If yes, please tell your friends. And please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back not next week, but soon with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.